On today's episode of Speech and Debate, an introduction, an explanation, and an analysis. I'm Thaddeus Smith, and this is Speech and Debate. Welcome to the first episode of Speech and Debate. I'm Thaddeus Smith, and I'm excited to be embarking on this project. There is no podcast geared towards the speech and debate community, and I aim to change that. But first, here's a little bit about me and my experience with speech and debate. I've been debating 3 years now. I've placed at quite a few tournaments in Washington State, qualified for state in multiple events, earned bids to both the TOC and NITONC, and I've also qualified as an alternate twice for the National Speech and Debate Tournament. I've competed in almost every event, but right now I'm doing public forum, oratory, and extemporaneous speaking. Now, this podcast aims to provide topic analyses, speech and debate tips, relevant news, and interviews with speech and debate professionals in order to help make your life as a competitor easier. But that's enough about this podcast and me. Let's get into what this podcast is really about. Debate. Let's talk public forum. This week, we're taking a look at the November public forum topic, resolved the United States should require universal background checks for all gun sales and transfer of ownership. This topic choice was highly controversial in the debate community and barely passed the vote, with only 52% of students voting for this resolution. And when you look at the topic itself, you can see why. As Reddit user Caffeinated Crying put it, "Whoever voted for this res better square the F up." Now, if you're not familiar with the concept of universal background checks, it might not immediately be clear just how difficult this topic is to debate. Now, the main issue with this is that, upon first glance, the negation has no real offense, or very few arguments that stand ground under fire. Luckily, there are one or two really strong cases the negation can make, and we're going to be going over the neg strategy shortly. But first, let's go ahead and look at an overview of this topic. Now, you have to be extra careful when you're debating this topic, and there's a couple reasons for that. So, first of all, a lot of Americans, usually those on the right, but there's some on the left as well, put the Second Amendment on a pedestal, as this mythical law that rules all others. It's more important or bigger than all others. And, while that's not necessarily okay or right, it's not necessarily bad or wrong either. It's very murky ground. When it comes to gun control, pretty much everybody feels very strongly one way or the other. And most people end up being either in the far left, where they say we should ban all guns, or in the far right, where they say we should remove the restrictions on guns. And that's a good majority of people, the stances on this issue. And then there's a smaller amount of people who are somewhere in the middle. Like, well, we shouldn't ban all guns, but we should do something. But the issue with that is a lot of these people are getting their news from late-night talk shows. People like Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel recently did a long, I think it was about 10-minute-long rant on gun control, on the specifically relating to the tragedy that happened in Vegas recently. But the fact is, a ton of people bought into it, but it wasn't really grounded in fact. It was debunked. I'm not going to go into the details of that at all. It was debunked by a few different right-wing people, conservative speakers, who just went over that really carefully and debunked it. But then a lot of the arguments on the right about guns have been debunked by people on the left. So it's a really murky ground, is what I'm trying to say. You have to be careful. Because people feel so strongly about this issue that, depending on how you portray yourself, you could come off as attacking the right. In your speech. So this is relating to the AF. If you're arguing for universal background checks, you just want to be kind of careful and cautious when you're writing your speech. You don't want to sound too offensive, too cocky, too anything. Because if you have a conservative judge, it could be very likely to offend them. So you want to be careful. Anyway, we'll get more into strategies and how you can really debate this topic in a little bit. Right now, let's look at an overview, a broad view. So, gun violence, to many people, is a uniquely American problem. The Gun Violence Archive has cataloged data over the past 1,800 days, and they found that there were over 1,500 shootings the past 1,800 days. They averaged it out. It's an average of 9 shootings every 10 days. That's such a huge amount. It's, like, incomprehensible. 9 mass shootings every 10 days. That means there's only, like, there's barely a day goes by when there isn't a mass shooting. And so that's not good. That's a very disturbing statistic. And when you look at other statistics from them, you see, like, over the past year, 2017, there's been over 46,000 incidents with guns, including 12,000 deaths, almost 25,000 injuries. But you're going to have to remember that that number, that statistic, doesn't take into account incidents that are, like, suicides, or incidents like accidents. And taking into account the fact that suicides are about a third, on average, over the past few years, suicides have been about a third of all the deaths are incidents with guns, and accidents have been another third, you're still left with about anywhere from 15 to 20,000 incidents a year with guns that are used specifically to try to harm another person with the intent of killing them or harming them. So that's an incredibly high amount. I mean, thinking if you go on the high side of that statistic, 20,000, that's still a ton. It's still more than many, many other countries, even those with larger populations. So it's a disturbing statistic. And the argument about gun control has been around for a while, but given the recent high-profile events with guns, take the Pulse shooting in Orlando last year, or the recent tragedy in Vegas, it's been brought to the forefront of American politics again. Organizations like the NRA are in the spotlight, and they're under attack from mostly the left, but also, again, some people on the right. Like I said, it's a murky topic. And just a couple days ago, the New York Times released an editorial saying we should repeal the Second Amendment. There you go with extreme left views. In that same paper, there was one saying we should loosen the restrictions on guns. Far right. So it's just, everybody is all over the spectrum. And a lot of people have such passionate, like, views about this issue. It's a really difficult topic to debate, like, coherently, without getting mad, getting angry at your opponent. So keep that in mind. Now, there's been quite a few Supreme Court cases that have, like, looked at the issue of guns, gun ownership, gun bans. The two primary ones that you're probably going to hear about are District of Columbia v. Keller in 2008 and McDonald v. Chicago in 2010. Both of those represent advocates of handgun control suing or being sued by people who want to be able to use their handguns. So a little bit of background on at least one of those. District of Columbia v. Keller is the one that you're probably going to hear about the most. That one was basically the District of Columbia, that's Washington, D.C., had issued a handgun ban. No citizen could own a handgun in 1976. But then Dick Heller, who was supported by the NRA and a few other like conservative groups, they brought a court case against D.C. It went all the way to the Supreme Court, and it was very divisive. Even among the Supreme Court, the wisest and most knowledgeable like constitutional scholars in the world, it was very divisive. It was a 5-4 decision that the handgun ban was unconstitutional. And you can read up more on that on the Supreme Court website. There's plenty of law articles about this. There's been whole books written about that case. But that's going to be a big thing that you're going to see. A few other things that you're going to see, just again, give you a broad overview. The gun show loophole is something that's going to be discussed quite a bit. So right now, background checks are required for any licensed registered gun dealer selling within the shop. They're required to give a background check. Now, the issue comes up with what we call the gun show loophole. Basically, if you're selling a gun at a gun show, no background check required. If you're selling a gun out of your car, no background check. If you're just giving a gun to somebody, no background check. And that's where this issue really comes up, where we've seen a lot of people, criminals, because, you know, most people who die of gun deaths die in everyday shootings. It's not like, and I'm take the tragedy in Vegas. Something a lot of the people on the right are saying, and something people on the negative are going to say, is that background checks wouldn't have stopped him from getting the guns, because he passed all of them. And that's true, but that's ignoring the fact that it's not like incidents like what happened in Vegas are happening daily. And most people don't die in highly publicized incidents like that. Most people die in just drive-bys or just everyday shootings, random acts of violence. So, there's a statistic, and I'll bring it up again later, but 90% of gun deaths that are caused by, like, not suicide or by accident could be stopped by universal background checks. So that's kind of where the gun show loophole comes in, and why it's dangerous is because people aren't getting background checks, and then they're going out and shooting people. So now we can go over, we're going to go over some, like, the important definitions you're going to want to see in this round, and just kind of people and terms. So there's another loophole, the Charleston loophole. Dylan Roof, who shot and killed or injured 9 members of a South Carolina church. If somebody's background check can't get processed within a 3-day period, then the sale's allowed to go through, even if that background check isn't finished. Well, it took longer than 3 days. He got the gun. A couple days later, it came back. He would have been prohibited from getting the gun, but by then it was too late, and he had killed a few people at this South Carolina church. And this was a highly publicized incident of a white supremacist attacking a black church. Few other definitions. When we look at the resolution itself, we don't need to define the United States. Everybody knows that we're talking about America. When you talk about require, requiring is just basically... we'll go with Merriam-Webster. So require is to claim or ask for by right or authority. So basically saying you're required to do something, you have to do it or you're going to get punished by the authorities. Merriam-Webster dictionary defines universal as including or covering all of a whole collectively or distributively without limit or exception. So universal, it applies to everything or everybody. And then when we look at background checks... we can define universal background checks all as one. The real definition you wanted to use, the Nova Law Review wrote, just this year, background checks, when we say that, it's a search of 3 federal databases, the National Crime Information Center, the Interstate Identification Index, and the NICS Index, and the search for people who are prohibited from using guns. For example, people convicted of a felony, or domestic violence misdemeanor, people who are mentally ill, illegal immigrants, unlawful users of drugs, or dishonorably discharged military veterans. Those are all people who are prohibited from owning a gun. But as I said, they find ways around that, like Dylan Roof did with Charleston loophole, or the gun show loophole that most people in everyday shootings are attacked with a gun purchased through that. Finally, we'll look at a couple of these last words. So all gun sales, that's all guns in general. So the other option when we voted for this resolution was a ban on handguns. So that's a specific weapon, but this one's applying to everything. So handguns, all the way from little handguns that you can put in your purse to assault rifles, civilian-owned assault rifles. And finally, if you want, you can define ownership. Merriam-Webster defines that as the state, relation, or fact of being an owner, and an owner is one who has a legal title to something. So that's pretty understanding. You don't need to define most of these. You could get away with not defining any of them. It'll give you maybe 30, 45 more seconds to go into your case and your evidence and your impacts. But if you need to, those are some of the common definitions. You can look, we've had a few other resolutions recently about gun control. The most recent one I can think of is in January of 2016. Lincoln Douglas debaters argued that private ownership of handguns ought to be banned. And so you can find a lot of evidence if you have LDers on your team or you used to be an LDer in briefs and cases from that. A lot of it's going to end up being applicable to this topic, this public forum topic. So now we kind of given you a broad overview. Let's go into depth a little more and let's talk about some of these pro strategies that are available. So there's a few main ways that the pro can go about this. So, first of all, what you can do, first main strategy is very simple. It's guns, like, guns are killing people. Lives are being lost to gun violence, and so universal background checks can reduce the number. And if we look, here's that statistic again, The Lancet reported that universal background checks could cut the rate of gun deaths by 90%. So, huge, huge amount of lives saved. And you can throw in an argument there just saying, like, you know, even one life saved is enough. One life saved, right? You can go for a little bit of emotional impact with the judge at the end, add something saying, even if we can save one life, that's one person who will go on to do something, become somebody, maybe be famous, maybe be the president. And if we can even save just that one person, then you have to affirm. So you can throw in a bit of emotional impact with that. Couple other pro strategies that you can do. When you examine, like, the issue of private sales, you can do a case kind of looking into this idea of private sales, and obviously public forum prohibits the presentation of counterplans, but it doesn't prohibit generalized and vague alternatives. So you can maybe put forth just an idea, obviously don't call it a counterplan, put forth an idea of how we could enforce this idea of monitoring all private sales and private transfers of ownership, and put that in there, but you just can't call it a plan. And then another strategy you could do is, rather than focusing on, like, the lives lost, the statistics on lives, you could focus on the loophole themselves, Charleston loophole, gun show loophole, and focus on how, like, persons falling into one of those categories should not be allowed to purchase their own guns, and that universal background checks will close that loophole, close those dangerous loopholes. So you can bring forth, again, that evidence from The Lancet. Universal background checks would stop 90% of gun sales to the criminals by closing the loophole. So you end up with a pretty solid argument by focusing on the loophole itself. And I will pull up a little bit of information here about those loopholes. So by focusing on, like, the actual specific people that should be prohibited, basically federal law already forbids gun sales to people who fall into those categories. Like I mentioned earlier, felons, illegal immigrants, drug users, etc. Basically, we can, you'll start out, you'll show, like, hey, these people aren't allowed to get guns, and they shouldn't be allowed to get guns, but they can, because we don't have universal background checks. So you can bring in some of the stuff like that. Really, that's about it for the pro. The pro, quite honestly, writing an affirmation case is easy for this topic. Aff is easy. Tons and tons of evidence out there. So you shouldn't have too much trouble with the aff. Where the trouble's going to start is with the negation. Like I said earlier, there's not a whole lot of great arguments that you can see right off the bat, because of the simple fact that, and this is something you're definitely going to see on neg if you're a pro, or when you're on neg and you're debating the aff is almost definitely going to bring up the fact that the majority of Americans support universal background checks. I think the statistic's like 80-something percent, and that's like 90-something of Democrats and 80-something of Republicans. So it's a very, very, like, non-issue among the American populace when it comes to background checks themselves. So that's what makes it so difficult. It's like, you don't, as the negation, you don't have great lay appeal, because to the average layperson, it's going to be like, well, you know, maybe this is a good thing. So really with the neg, now public forum, obviously burden of proof is built, so it kind of falls upon both sides, but with a neg for this topic, you really are going to have the burden of proof. You're really going to have to show why we should not have universal background checks. So looking at some of these con strategies here. So the main problem with this is that with the resolution itself is that universal background checks already exist. The ish and are carried out by the licensed dealers. So the main issue is that the people who aren't doing universal background checks are either gun shows, but that doesn't account for a lot of it. The people who aren't following these background checks are the people who are selling guns illegally. So universal background checks for all gun sales, so you can make it a law, so now any kind of gun sale has to have this universal background check, but criminals are going to keep breaking the law. So, like, criminals, no matter what, are going to be able to get their hands on guns. We've seen this in England when they instituted a complete gun ban, in Australia when they instituted the gun buyback program. They didn't see any kind of significant dip at all, really, in the amount of gun deaths, and they actually saw an increase in violent crime because people were resorting to things like knives. You see in England, just recently, they've been considering a ban on kitchen knives. That's not even a joke. Banning kitchen knives, because now those are being used as weapons. So, criminals are still going to be able to get their hands on guns, or they're just going to turn to other more violent methods of crime. So anyway, here's a couple of different con strategies you can go with. So, here's one. So basically, this isn't really enforceable. So like I just said, like, criminals are going to be able to get their hands on guns no matter what. So, like, why should the public, like, necessarily have to go through these universal background checks if this law isn't enforceable? So right now it's enforced by the federal government, like the ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Bureau. But the issue is, when you expand this to all kinds of private sales, it doesn't become enforceable. It's like a completely law. It's a completely symbolic law, pretty much, as it's not enforceable, and the criminals are still going to be getting their hands on guns because, again, the criminals, you know, by definition, don't follow the law. So basically what you can do is you can argue that companies and people who already are, like, selling guns legally, they're required to do background checks already. So the only thing is, like, you make these background checks universal. Like, who is going to go around, like, or there's no way, you can't just station a police officer in every single house, follow this person around, make sure that person doesn't sell a gun illegally. So it's not enforceable at all, and quite honestly, it could lead to the surveillance state. You can do an argument there. Be careful that you don't link it to something stupid like extinction or nuclear war or nuclear holocaust, but you can link it into the surveillance state because of how, like, it's an enforcement nightmare. So what is the government going to do? Surveillance state, security cameras everywhere, you know, think person of interest, giant machine that scans every single person in the United States, that kind of thing. And while that's not really likely, it'll have good lay judge appeal because it'll scare the judge, pretty much. So that's the main con strategy. There's another con strategy. It'll be a little bit more difficult to argue at, but it's going to be better if you can get good at arguing it. And we're not even, before I get to that, we're not even going to talk about a Second Amendment rights case, because arguing that universal background checks violate the Second Amendment is just going to be completely ridiculous, completely and totally, like, you're going to lose because of the fact that, like, again, the majority of Americans don't believe that universal background checks violate the Second Amendment. It just becomes a non-issue, and you're going to have a super hard time arguing that it violates the Second Amendment, so just don't even go there. Stick with one of the couple strategies I'm talking about in here, or find something on your own, but don't go into violating the Second Amendment. It's going to be too difficult to argue. You're going to lose a lot of rounds. It's not worth it. Anyway, the other main con strategy is basically this idea of symbolic action. So, like, making these, basically, the government, the media, the citizens, after any mass incident, massively publicized incident, immediately jump to the extreme. Immediately, like, we demand action, right? So what you have to do, or what we can do, is you can look at that, say, well, look what happened after Virginia Tech shooting, which at the time was the worst mass shooting in American history. Look at what happened after Sandy Hook, after Orlando, after Vegas. Everybody just says, we demand action. The government does something small, like, okay, well, let's just, like, kind of go over the laws again, check. Back in the 80s, they banned machine guns. Like, but the issue with that was, like, the majority of Americans didn't have them. Very difficult to get their hands on. It was like completely symbolic action. It wasn't actually doing anything. We look further into this. Basically, true solutions, what you can argue is that the only solution to gun violence would be a ban on the private ownership of handguns and assault rifles. Basically arguing that the symbolic action by doing something small, some like policy that isn't enforceable, like the universal background checks, doesn't actually do anything. And it only serves to kind of push real reform off to the side. Basically paying off, and not really paying off, but symbolically paying off the voters into believing that hey, we did a thing, we're making a difference, when really they didn't make any difference at all, and gun violence is still going to stay the same. So basically, again, be careful, because you don't want to sound like you're proposing a counter plan, but say universal background checks aren't going to work, first of all. Second of all, it's completely symbolic. They only serve to just push real reform off to the side. And so what we have to do is we just have to ignore symbolic action in favor of, real action and real change. And again, don't present a plan, but say real change is not going to come from universal background checks. It's going to come from the banning of guns. So that's a strategy you can do. That strategy can pay off really well. Symbolic action is going to strike a nerve, or is really going to get to the judge's heart, especially with what you look, if you can bring in recent incident with Trump. President Trump, he was getting asked about the Vegas shootings, and he said, we're going to look into it. We're going to look into gun reform. And of course, when he says that, he doesn't mean it. You can listen to any of these both left-wing and right-wing speakers and radio show hosts, podcast hosts, that kind of thing. And they're all saying the same thing, which is that that's what he says when he doesn't have an answer, and he doesn't want to come up with an answer. They ask, so you can bring that in. It's going to work well if you live in a liberal state, like I'm in Washington. So arguments saying well, look at what Trump did. He's saying, we're going to look into it. That's a form of symbolic action that's designed only to appease the people for a couple weeks until the incident's off their minds, which, as you can see from the news, this is already starting to leave the American public's minds. The worst mass shooting in American history is already starting to leave Americans' minds because of the fact that, they're saying, okay, well, we're going to look into it. And the NRA doing this thing with bump fire stocks, getting rid of bump stocks, that's completely symbolic. That's not going to really change anything at all, especially considering, from what I've read, from what some of these articles saying, bump stocks will end up making it harder to control the rifle. It's not going to change anything, basically. It's a completely symbolic action, and you can bring that into that con case. That's what I would recommend you try to run on con, is you try to run stuff arguing about symbolic action, and just in general, that's going to be the strongest negation case that you can run, unless you come up with something very original, you find some, hidden piece of evidence somewhere, which if you do, absolutely send that to me. I'll discuss it in another episode, but, for the most part, symbolic action is going to be the way to go when you're on negation, and looking at lives lost is going to be the way to go when you're on pro. All right, so we've looked at this debate topic kind of in a broader view, then we narrowed down and we looked at the pros and cons of the pro and con sides. Well, that's about it for the topic. It really is. Like I said, this topic isn't great. I don't expect people to have a whole lot of fun when they're debating this, and most of the arguments are going to end up being the same. So if you can put together good blocks, you're going to be set. And you're going to be doing well. Really focus on speaking coherently and fluently with this topic. And that's about all I can say. Well, before I go, I'd like to give a huge shout out to James Kellums of Everyday Debate for his outstanding topic analyses. He puts a ton of work into finding evidence for even the hardest topics like this one. So make sure to check out his blog at www.everydaydebate.blogspot.com. And I'd also like to give a shout out to Baylor Briefs for their outstanding evidence packets. I'm Thaddeus Smith. This was Speech and Debate. Next time on Speech and Debate, we'll look at the November-December LD topic. Any news articles cited or clips played in this podcast either fall underneath the fair use policy of U.S. copyright law or have been properly attributed in the description of this podcast. As always, I'm Thaddeus Smith, and I'll see you next week.